And now, Westwood One presents the Lost Lennon Tapes, brought to you by Budweiser, the king of beers. For all you do, this Bud's for you. Our host is John Lennon's longtime friend and confidant, Elliot Mintz.
It's February 11th, 1963. The Beatles' second single, Please Please Me, enters the British top 10. John Lennon, Paul McCartney, George Harrison, and Ringo Starr have been excused a day early from their first national tour, opening for 16-year-old singing sensation Helen Shapiro, and head into the EMI recording studios in London's Abbey Road. There, with producer George Martin, the Beatles begin a marathon session in the morning. 12 hours later, the rest of the songs for the group's first album are in the can, ready for release late in March under the title Please Please Me. Sparked by radio appearances like this one on the BBC, the single becomes the Beatles' first number one in early March. From that moment on, Beatlemania reigns supreme in the United Kingdom.
Last night I said these words to my girl.
Live on the BBC, the Beatles with their first number one single, Please Please Me, featuring John on lead vocals. Now, while Beatlemania rules Britannia throughout 1963, it's almost another year before the Beatles conquer the colonies. Here, life as we know it changes forever on Sunday night, February 9th, 1964, when an estimated 73 million American TV viewers, myself among them, hear this.
Now, yesterday and today, our theater's been jammed with newspapermen and hundreds of photographers from all over the nation, and these veterans agree with me that the city never has witnessed the excitement stirred by these youngsters from Liverpool who call themselves the Beatles. Now, tonight, you're going to twice be entertained by them. Right now and again in the second half of our show. Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles!
Close your eyes and I'll kiss you. Tomorrow I'll miss you. Remember, I'll always need you. And then while I'm away, I'll write home every day. And I'll send all my loving to you. I'll pretend that I'm kissing the lips. And hope that my dreams will come true. And then while I'm away, I'll write home every day. And I'll send all my loving to you. All my loving, I will send.
Songs from the Beatles' historic debut on The Ed Sullivan Show, Sunday night, February 9th, 1964. She Loves You, featuring John and Paul, sharing lead vocals, and before that, All My Loving, with Paul singing lead.
Coming up on the Lost Lennon Tapes, Woodshedding in Hamburg, the Tony Sheridan Sessions, and Rockin' on the Reeperbahn at the Star Club. Stay with us. And now back to the Lost Lennon Tapes with our host, Elliot Mintz.
As the Beatles invade the East Coast during early February 1964, the MGM Records label tries to cash in on stateside Beatlemania by releasing an album titled The Beatles with Tony Sheridan and their friends. It's a hodgepodge of sides recorded in Hamburg during May 1961 by singer Tony Sheridan, with backing on some cuts by the Beatles, or by the Beatles using the name The Beat Brothers. At the time, the lineup is John, Paul, George, and Pete Best. Now, among the tunes that session producer Bert Kempfert records is this rare Beatles instrumental titled Cry for a Shadow, the only known song co-written by George Harrison and John Lennon. In part two of Rolling Stone's Lennon Remembers Working Class Hero interview, published in February 1971, John talks about woodshedding in the clubs of Hamburg's Reeperbahn district nearly a decade earlier. That's when the Beatles were playing set after set, night after night, and really got hot on stage.
What we generated was fantastic. Well, we played straight rock, and there was nobody to touch us in Britain, you know. But as soon as we made it, the edges were knocked off. As musicians, we killed ourselves then to make it. And that was the end of it. And George and I are more inclined to say that, you know. We always miss the club days because that's when we were playing music.
John Lennon taking the lead on Twist and Shout, recorded on amateur equipment at Hamburg Star Club in December 1962, just a few months after Ringo Starr replaces Pete Best as the Beatles' drummer. It turns out to be the band's fifth and final club engagement in Germany. After logging some 800 hours on the Reeperbahn stages, the Beatles' woodshedding days are history.
Coming up, more of Elliot's first ever interview with Sean Ono Lennon and the broadcast premiere of John Lennon's Boys and Girls. And now, back to the Lost Lennon Tapes.
This is John Lennon talking to you from the heart of the west side of New York in an interview, exclusive, a four interview with a brand new New Yorker, Sean Ono Lennon, spelled S-E-A-N. Okay? Now, tell me, Sean, what's your first impression of New York? I see. As a citizen of the world, Sean, a human being, as it were, who has traveled and lived the world over, what distinguishes New York for you as a place to live and work apart from the world's other major cities? That's the one I was talking about, yes. Exactly.
From December 1975, that's Sean Ono Lennon's very first interview. I remember it well. He was already a pro at 2 months old. Of course, in my interview with Sean, 12 Decembers later in his John and Yoko room, as he calls it, I find him to be just as responsive, but much better able to express himself. When you were born, and I will probably always be boring you by the fact that I was here in this building, in this apartment, when Mom and Dad brought you home from the hospital, but I do remember when you were only a month old and I came in from L.A. to visit.
I remember it too now.
You remember meeting me then. Yes,
of course.
I know. From that day, when Mom and Dad brought you back from the hospital, for the next 5 years, Dad became what was called a house husband.
Yeah.
Where he basically looked after you, Mom looked after the business matters. and neither of them did any recording.
Mm-hmm.
During the house husband period, and I know that this is tough for you because you were between ages 1 and 5.
Yeah.
Do you remember Dad taking care of you, looking after you? What kind of recollection?
One thing I do remember is we would always watch Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, and we would always watch The Muppet Show. And it would always be like a certain time that we would do this. I would take a bath. He would take a shower. He'd get in a robe. I'd get in pajamas. We'd go into the old bedroom, which is my mom and dad's bedroom, but we don't use it anymore. We use it as a guest bedroom, and we got this other bedroom. And we'd watch it in the old bedroom. First, we'd watch Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Then we'd watch The Muppet Show to, you know, unscare me. And then we'd wrestle. After The Muppet Show.
Yes.
And then I'd have to go to sleep. And when I'd go to sleep, I had these plastic planes. It was a mobile over my bed. I would climb up. Well, Dad would put me up there. He would tuck me in. And I would pretend the planes were flying in the ceiling because the ceiling was painted exactly like a sky. And then he would take the lights and he would go, "Good night, Sean," with the lights. And then I'd say, "What, Daddy?" or something like that. And because I liked when he did that, and he'd go, "Good night, Sean," with the lights. So they'd go on and off to his voice. And then he'd turn them off and I'd go to sleep. And
he would blink the lights on.
To his voice.
To his voice.
Good night, Sean.
Close your eyes. Close your eyes. Have no fear. The monster's gone. He's on the run, and your daddy is here. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful.
Sean, I'm sorry you've got a cold. Be better soon. Mommy's coming today.
Well, you're too mean to fight.
Good night, Sean.
John Lennon singing an early version of Beautiful Boy, originally written for Sean in one of the demos John records during mid-1980 as he and Sean vacation in Bermuda. Sean's Good Night is an outtake from an early Beautiful Boy mix recorded a few months later during the Double Fantasy sessions.
At first I thought it was written for me, but now I think it was directed to me, but it was also, I think, directed to as a song of all fathers singing to their children on how fathers think about their children. And, you know, before you cross the street, you know, hold my hand. Life is what happens to you when you're making other plans. It's basically a story, sort of a father telling the boy to go to sleep, telling the boy about life, you know, a young boy, not 10 or 12, mm-hmm. 5, 6.
Sean is 4, going on 5 when he and John visit Bermuda. They're supposed to be doing nothing but soaking up the sun, but John winds up spending a lot of the time holed up in his room, working on the tunes he and Yoko would record that fall back in New York. Meanwhile, Sean spends much of the time in Bermuda with his babysitter.
I remember that really well. He didn't really pay too much attention to me then. I remember Helen was there.
Yes.
And Helen took care of me. He was always busy writing while we were in Bermuda. And every once in a while he would walk around. And I would always be swimming. And I showed him, hey, look, I can swim on my side. This was a big thing for me because I could swim on my side and have one of my eyes in the water and one of them out of the water. And it looked like you're going really fast because your eye's so close to the water. So I was really excited. I thought I was going 100 miles an hour. So I was like, look how fast I'm going, Daddy. And it's like, that's great. And no matter, you know, I guess fathers are like that, but I... No matter how lame it is, I mean, it was pretty lame. I was going really slow, but he was like, yeah, you are going really fast.
All the little girls and boys playing with their little toys. All they really needed was you. This may be something love.
From 1980, John Lennon singing Girls and Boys, a song from the Lennon archives that's never been broadcast on the radio. We'll hear more from my interview with Sean Ono Lennon later in the show.
Coming up, we'll hear John Lennon and May Pang recall the outrageous Phil Spector rock and roll sessions. Let's get back to the Lost Lennon Tapes with our host, Elliot Mintz.
Just let me hear some of that rock. Back beat, you can't lose it. Any old time you use.
Chuck Berry, Elvis Before the Army, Jerry Lee Lewis, Little Richard, Buddy Holly, Larry Williams, just a few of the greats who pioneered rock and roll during the mid to late 50s, leaving an incredible impression on high school kids all over the world, including John Lennon. He is a student at the Quarry Bank High School in the British port city of Liverpool. During John's early years with the Beatles, the band performs many covers of classic American rockers like the one we're hearing now, a hit by Chuck Berry from late 1957. But after the first couple of Beatle albums, John and Paul are writing so many originals that the cover songs mostly fall by the wayside. Finally, after recording his Mind Games LP in September 1973, Lennon decides to tap back into his rock and roll roots by recording an album of his favorite oldies.
In between takes and with the Beatles too, always would break into Bebopalula, or we'd always jam those songs, you know. They're my favorite songs, a lot of them, and I never did them because I admired the original so much I wouldn't dare touch them. But by now people are ruining everything, so I thought, why can't I do it, you know, they're all doing it, so what the hell, you know. So I thought, I know, who shall I use, you know? The great Phil Spector, you know. I'd used him before, but I'd always controlled it and been co-producer. But this one, it took me 3 weeks to talk him into being the producer. I said, look, I'm Ronnie on this one, all right? I just want to sing. I don't want to know nothing about nothing.
Helping John coordinate the autumn 1973 rock and roll sessions in Los Angeles is May Pang, who'd worked as John and Yoko's assistant in New York. May is with John in L.A. during this period, his infamous Lost Weekend.
It got to be a little out of hand. The first night, I must admit, I was so amazed. I'm standing in the studio and we're thinking, oh, it's a setup for 8 people. We don't know who's coming into the sessions. And it's never been credited as who played on all those sessions, but I'll name a few now, so for all the listeners. I'm standing there and all of a sudden these people start walking in and I'm counting and I said, John, there's more than 10 people in the studio all of a sudden. He says, I know. And you see Steve Cropper, Larry Carlton, Hal Blaine, Jim Keltner, Leon Russell, Barry Mann, Jeff Barry, By the time everybody got in and filed in, there was over 27 musicians. John was just struck dumb. He was like, what is going on here? There were two drummers, two bass players, three electric guitars, three acoustic guitars, a whole horn section, two piano players. And it was great to see all this. I mean, Leon Russell playing one part of a piano, Barry Mann playing the other, and, you know, he's sitting there. God, these are people that wrote all the great hits. And Phil got them all together.
We started the sessions and they went well, and then they gradually collapsed into mania, you know. It's one way of putting it. But it definitely got crazy. You know, there was 28 guys playing a night and 15 of them were out of their minds, including me. And the sessions broke down. We broke them down pretty well, me and Phil. They got really balmy, you know. I'm not even going to say what happened. Some of it was ridiculous. And that's the first time I ever let an album out of my control since the first Beatle albums. I never do it again. And next minute, I didn't have the tapes and Phil had a car accident. That's all I heard. I waited 8 months in L.A. waiting for him to recover. He's a mysterious man. His woodwork to perform, my dear. Phil works in such mysterious ways.
Well, John eventually gets the rock and roll masters back from Spectre, but not until well into 1974, after already recording another album, Walls and Bridges, out in late September. But instead of leaving his rock and roll album on the shelf, John keeps what he feels are the best tracks from the Spectre sessions, records another batch of classic rockers with different musicians in New York, and finally releases his rock and roll LP in February 1975. On the cover is a photo of John from the Beatles' first trip to Hamburg. It turns out to be John's last album until Double Fantasy, more than 5 years later.
Coming up on the Lost Lennon Tapes, Sean Ono Lennon talks about Japan and Meat City and plays a few of his favorite Lennon songs. We're back with the Lost Lennon Tapes and our host, Elliot Mintz.
During my Christmas 87 interview with Sean Ono Lennon at the Dakota, I asked him about some of the places he visited during his dad's house husband years besides Bermuda. Sean surprises me by recalling the five-month trip to the Far East the Lennons took during the latter half of 1977. Sean turned two that October.
I really liked when we went to Japan.
Mm-hmm.
I remember ordering room service. I would love melon. And I'd get up before anybody. And I'd go in this room. We'd always have the same hotel room in the same hotel. And I memorized the number, right? And I'd call it. Right about when everybody was waking up, when my dad and mom were waking up, melon would get there. And I'd eat it, you know. And just the things we did in Japan, you know, walking around, you know.
When I ask him if he can recall the worst experience with his dad during the house husband period, Sean remembers his first lesson in the art of eating with a knife and fork.
I came into dinner, right? And I started cutting the meat with my hands. He goes, Sean, that's not the way to do it, right? So he showed me how, and he goes, this is the English way or something like that. And he took his knife in. He took his knife in his right hand and his fork in his left hand, and he put the fork on the end of the meat and cut the end of the meat off. And he goes, look, see? When I cut it off, the fork's already in the piece of meat that I'm going to eat. And I go, wow, how'd you do that, right? So it was this big episode because I couldn't figure out how he did it. So I kept on cutting it, and the fork would be on the wrong side, and I'd pick up the fork and the whole steak would be on the end of the fork. By the way, I'm a vegetarian now.
No more knives in meat.
No more knives in meat, just in fish.
It's funny you should think of that as being one of the worst experiences.
I was so sad because he was like, that's not the way to do it, right? So I was like, well, how do you do it? So I was very frustrated and confused and upset that he was yelling at, that he yelled at me at first. He never really did yell at me, only once or twice, you know, or three or four times that I can remember.
In the years since he was three or four, when he was watching the movie Yellow Submarine and realized his dad had been a Beatle, Sean has come to love the band's music. I ask him if he has a favorite Beatles song or album.
Let me think. No, I like them all. When I was really a little kid, I would always sing them and stuff, you know, just to myself in my room and stuff. I would be singing them to myself or some of my dad's solo records. And I was really into all the stuff, Yellow Submarine and Sgt. Pepper, the White Album, all of it.
Do you need anybody? I need somebody to love. That's my favorite song.
Very good.
Who was saying, I need somebody to love? You?
Ringo, but Paul and I are singing with him.
What's the song, Paul?
What would
you think if I sang in a song?
Sang out of tune. Oh, A Little Help from My Friends, that's what it's called.
What would you think if I sang out of tune? Would you stand up and walk out on me? Lend me your ears and I'll sing you a song, and I'll try not to sing.
From the Beatles, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band LP, that's With a Little Help from My Friends, Sean Ono Lennon's favorite Beatles song during the fall of 1979, when he was four. Now, when I ask Sean if he has a favorite song from his dad's post-Beatle years, he says it's...
Probably Woman.
You like that one best?
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Now, most of us are familiar with Woman as it sounds on John and Yoko's Double Fantasy album, but right now we're going to hear one of John's earliest demos of the song he wrote, not just for Yoko, but for all womankind.
One, two, three, four.
Woman, I can hardly
Version of Woman from mid-1980 that we just recently found in John Lennon's personal tapes at the Dakota. Continuing my interview with John and Yoko's son, Sean, I ask him about his relationship with Julian, his half-brother by John's first wife, Cynthia.
We're really close. He's really independent, though. He's a grown-up now. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't expect him to be like a big brother who lives next door and who'll be like, come on, help me with my homework or let's play ball or something. He's not that kind of brother to me. He's someone I look up to a lot. You know, I like him as much as you can like a brother or more, because I don't argue with him ever. You know, most brothers and brothers or sisters are like, no, that's my side of the room or something, but he doesn't live with us.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have that relationship where we argue all the time. When we do see each other, it's sort of like a celebration.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and you like
we're
his
very
music,
close.
Don't you?
Yeah, I like his music. You know, one or two. Just like my dad, you know, are sort of like, yeah, that's really nice, Julian. But, you know, but 98% of his songs I really like. 99.
Is there a favorite of Jules's that you love?
I like Sitting on a Pebble.
You do like that?
Yeah.
Sitting on the doorstep of the house again to fall on. I can feel you there. Thinking of a reason, well, it's really not very hard to love you even though you nearly lost my heart. The meaning of our love, it fits
The title track from the 1984 debut album by John and Cynthia Lennon's only son, Julian, and the favorite Julian song of John and Yoko Ono Lennon's only son, Sean Taro Ono Lennon, who knows and loves it as Sitting on a Pillow. Our thanks to Sean for being my special guest this week, and we'll hear more of this exclusive interview on future broadcasts. We're glad you joined us for this edition of The Lost Lennon Tapes. I'm Elliot Mintz, and I look forward to seeing you next week when we'll bring you more rare and unreleased interviews and songs from the Dakota Archives.
The Lost Lennon Tapes, brought to you by Budweiser, the king of beers. For all you do, this bud's for you. The Lost Lennon Tapes, a presentation of the Westwood One Radio Network in cooperation with the John Lennon Estate. Written and produced by Stephen Peebles. Production and engineering by Dave Kephart, with pre-production assistance by Ray Klein. Research assistance by John Bermuda Schwartz and Steve Longo. Our executive producer, Norm Pattis. For Westwood One, I'm Scott Muni. Thanks for listening.